Prepare to relax and indulge in luxury at JW Marriott San Antonio Hill Country Resort and Spa. Unwind in the sun at our 9-acre River Bluff Water Experience, featuring a lazy river, water slides, and private poolside cabanas. Relax and rejuvenate in our award-winning Lantana Spa, or challenge yourself on the golf course at TPC San Antonio. Whether you're looking for adventure, relaxation, or a little of both, you'll discover all that makes our resort a unique luxury retreat. Visit jwsanantonio.com and start planning your next family getaway.
The thing that you and I are so blessed by is not only do we share this very deep sort of love and magic, but we also wound each other in the exact way that forces us to look at our family of origin wounds, right? Both of us come from pretty, you know, interesting, to say the least, family of origins.
You're listening to The Madeline Moon Show, a dating and relationship podcast that will bloom open your wild expression, deepen your emotional range, and expand your capacity for mythic love.
Hi, baby. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
So good to have you here. Thank you. Oh, my gosh. For the second time, maybe the third time.
Yeah.
Magic. So this feels like a really big moment for us to be able to come on and talk about our OG meeting, our first iteration of our relationship, our breakup, our getting back together. Like, it's a lot. It's a full meal.
It's a telenovela.
Yeah, it's a telenovela. It's an epic saga. And so it feels really, like, it feels really beautiful to be able to bring this to everybody who's particularly watched from the beginning to the middle to where we're at now. Mm. It's been like both a public and a private experience all the way through.
Yeah.
So I'm really, I've been like waiting for this moment with you for a while now. So I'm really grateful to have this with you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still not sure how many people care.
<You
know?
laughs> A lot of people care.
Yeah, about our drama. but I do think that there's like in the learnings that we've had, I do think there's a lot to share.
So much.
Yeah. And a lot shows up in my teaching, and I'm sure a lot shows up in your teaching. And so, you know, I think this would be a good way to show people how we practice
100%
what we teach.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So I want to talk about our meeting. Let's just start from the beginning.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, we're going to co-create the story about how we met. I want to start because I met you first. I found you first. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start with that and then you can take it from there.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know what year it was. It was probably
2018.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It was the year Claire died.
No, I met you before that, I think. I don't know. Maybe it was.
2017, 2018.
I think she passed. Claire is John's daughter. I think she passed my second year in the salon. Mm. So I was in the year before that.
Yeah.
So I was on Facebook one night and I was like, I've been teaching things about the feminine, the masculine for such a long time now. It was like 6 months. I was like, I need a new teacher, like a teacher that's going to take me really deep into feminine and into masculine. Who do you know? This was just like a Facebook post. Right. And then I had someone DM me on Facebook and was like, I'm doing this year-long training. I think it was his second year. I think you would like them. And so he sent me your link and I was just watching all your videos and I was like, this feels like this would be a good teacher for me. So I immediately applied, had the interview, and then got into your first, or I guess it was your second year of hosting the salon, the relationship embodied salon, embodied relationship salon. Mm-hmm. And then I remember our first call in that program and I was just like, what the fuck am I in? Mm-hmm. What the fuck is this? Mm-hmm. And then of course our first immersion where I, you know, met you in person and felt, from the start, a sense of deep, I don't know if the word was devotion at that time, but there was like definitely at that beginning moment, there was a feeling of orientation, shall we say, like orientation towards your work, orientation towards you, orientation towards your voice. And of course, at that time, it was like, oh my God, I found a great teacher for me.
Did you know?
Little did I know. Always. Yeah. So that's the part that I want to share.
Yeah.
About the very, very beginning of how we met.
Yeah. So you were in that program for 2 years.
Yeah. 2 years. 1 year of just student in the what the fuck am I in moment. Mm-hmm. And then year two in assisting, like going a little bit deeper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So before your audience is ready to like come at me with pitchforks, I think, you know, it's important to let them know that there was nothing between us at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was very, I think we had one conversation about you coming back in the second year, but other than that.
Yeah, it was a sales conversation.
Yeah, it was an enrollment. It was an enrollment
when
conversation.
John was enrolling me in the second year when I was having doubts.
Yeah, yeah. So I did not pluck her out of my program.
What was our dynamic like? How would you describe our dynamic in those first couple years?
Teacher-student. Yeah, teacher-student. And very much in that container and very much, you know, you were very in, which is, you know, something that I really appreciated and loved. You
were so in.
Yeah, you were full, like you loved the work. You jumped in with both feet. And then there was those moments where when you were going to come back for the second year, where I was like, look, this is going to really test you to be, to assist. And it did. Mm-hmm. It was very much teacher student, very clean, clear teacher student.
In fact, I didn't really have, now looking back, I can have one memory, but besides that one memory, I did not have any other memories of you making eye contact with me. Like you didn't even make eye contact. I don't think you weren't like avoiding it, but you just like, you weren't giving your students this full deep presence. It was like you were always really wide with the whole space. And it was something I kind of felt a little bratty about. Just like, where's your fucking eye contact with me? Except for one time I remember, I think I was like kind of having wounds and acting up in the program or something. And I got in trouble in that moment. And that's when you were like, Madeline, look at me. Yeah. And so then, and then you coached me through that.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I, for obvious reasons, I take that space very seriously and I take all my teaching spaces very seriously. And there's just no possibility of any sexual or emotional attachment that can happen in those spaces, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how I am today. And, you know, I have, me and then everybody on my staff, we all have a rule that there's no, you cannot date anybody who has been in a program for a year. You can't actually change the nature of the relationship for a year. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just the cleanest way to do it. And so when we finally did, I think we finally did have a conversation just as friends. You offered to give me a gene key.
Oh, yes.
It was like a year plus after you had left the program and I hadn't spoken to you at all and you were in LA and you wanted to give me this gene key reading. So I was like, all right, you know, sure. Right. Mm-hmm. And that was the first conversation we had that was not as teacher student.
Yeah. And that was the day that I stepped on a jellyfish. Mm. I think I told you this. I stepped on a jellyfish and then I had this gene key reading with you and I prepared 4 pages of notes. I wanted to impress you. I wanted to impress you. It wasn't even like, I want to impress John because I have feelings. I didn't have any feelings.
Nor did I. Right? Nor did I.
But of course, I did at the time, I will completely own, have you on this pedestal in a way of just John wants to have a gene key reading with me. And like writing all these notes, studying every single thing about your chart. And then I stepped on this jellyfish and then my foot was like, I'm kidding, not kidding, 3 times as big as it normally was. It was huge. I might be exaggerating a little bit, but it was very big. And then I took all this Benadryl and then I was really quite like Benadryl high. And then I was giving you this reading. Right. And I think you said afterwards, you were kind of like, that was weird. I did not do a good job at all giving you that reading. But that was our first like friend connection point. And then... yeah. And then let's talk about how we moved into relationship territory. Maybe that first experience that we had together.
Yeah. Well, for those who don't know, we were part of this was like a year and a half later. we were part of a teacher training group together with my teacher at the time, Don Cartwright. And you called to ask me about the program. You wanted to know whether I thought it was a good program for you. And I said, and we had a conversation then, I think it was over Zoom, mm-hmm. right? And I was like, I think this would be great for you. And, right, it's a small group mm-hmm. and, you know, we might be practicing together. And how does that feel to you? And I know that's when I noticed like something shift in you. That's when I was like, oh, yeah. Okay. I think you asked me like, can I flirt with you or something like that? And,
do you remember that? Can we share the boundary question?
What was that?
You said, do you have any boundaries with me
around this teacher training and the practices?
Mm.
I said, no, no boundaries.
Right.
And you were like, okay, well that might change. We'll see.
Right. Right.
But yeah. And then I asked if I could flirt with you. And then I said that I wanted to have eye contact with you. Oh, you were like, do you need anything before the program begins to be able to fully drop into this? And I said, yeah, I want 5 minutes of eye contact with you. And I was thinking like there at the first weekend intensive, like maybe we'd set aside some time. And then you took that kind of declaration of my desire and you really directed it and you were like, okay, well then let's set up a time, an actual time to be able to drop in together. And that's when you invited me to your house to have dinner. And he even made me this whole He made me this whole video of how to drive into the driveway, what code to put into the keypad. And like you filmed this whole little video of how to get directly to your house, which was not like hard. It wasn't hard to get to your house. It wasn't that hard. But I really appreciate that. And that's when I started to feel like, oh, I mean, this feels like, you know, this feels like in one way, Teacher John of like, you know, guiding and directing. Mm-hmm. So it's very clear. But then in another way, I'm like, well, this feels very personal to make me a video with a little keypad and those instructions.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So I think, so we came together as part of Dawn's teacher training and pretty much knew right away that we wanted to explore something different pretty quickly. The first night we were like, wait a minute, this feels like something different that we want to explore. So we had, I can't remember if we had a conversation with Dawn before we went in to the teacher training.
No.
I think you sure? Cause I think we declared it to her.
She talked to both of us individually.
I got it. Got it. Yeah. Yeah. And then we were part of this 10 day in the mountains, kind of totally closed off Tantra teacher training. And I, for me, that's where we fell in love.
Yeah.
That's where we fell in love.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we just didn't know, you know, what it was going to look like for the next year or so. So.
Okay. So the first night that I came over to you in Malibu, that's kind of when we decided we were going to give this a go and we were going to create a container for relationship to occur. Which is something I fought at first, but it's also one of the things I appreciate the most about you is that you are so intentional with containers, like where do things belong so that we can have this space and the time and play within the container and there's a lack of a leakiness. And at the same time, it was very hard for me to wrap my head around like container first and date inside of the container rather than dating and then enter a container. And now it makes total sense to me. And I think it's a really beautiful way to approach relationship because, like you said, little did we know how much we would have to work with in our dynamic.
Yeah.
So I'd love to talk about that first iteration of our relationship, maybe like splitting it up into like what we loved.
Yeah.
What was so special about the first, and when I say first iteration for those who are listening, who like don't know our story, and I'm just assuming everyone knows our story. John and I were together for a year. We broke up. We got back together for a couple months. We broke up. And then we were broken up for a year and then got back together last May, June. Mm-hmm. So that's 2023.
Yeah.
So we're kind of, you know, talking about this in segments. And the first iteration, the first year of us being together is so different from now.
Yeah.
Which is a beautiful you know, thing we'll explore at some point today of talking about like how a relationship with two people can be so different. Like one is, you know, in heading in one direction, and then it's not actually about finding a new relationship. Sometimes it's about the same relationship, but letting yourselves die and being reborn as different versions so that that relationship can thrive, which is, I think, really a big moral of what we've experienced. But anyways, in this first iteration, the first year, what did you love about our magic?
I mean, what I loved was there was an immediate sort of sense of home. There was an immediate sort of sense of like, we just fit in a lot of ways, like the way you nourished me, the way I nourished you. There was just a real beautiful nourishment, right? That I felt that first time with Dawn. I love that we spoke the same language. You know what I mean? Like to me, to have somebody who speaks the language of the body and understands embodiment and understands sexual polarity and understands like all the things that I've, you know, based my life on, like that was very special to me. You know, and I just felt like there was so much like deep, like so many people that fall in love, like there was so much deep connection with deep wounding, right? Like we were still working through unwinding a teacher-student dynamic. We were still working through, you know, family of origin wounds. We were still, and we didn't know what the fuck to do with those. Like the thing that you and I are so blessed by is not only do we share this very deep sort of love and magic, but we also wound each other in the exact way that forces us to look at our family of origin wounds, right? Both of us come from pretty, you know, interesting, say the least, family of origins. And we just pushed those buttons like most relationships, but it seemed more intense with us.
Yeah.
You know, it seemed not just kind of therapeutic, but karmic. Right. And so I loved how much we played. I loved how we traveled together. I loved like we fit immediately. We fit. And then we also fit in the imago sense of like we were like perfectly matched in order to heal the things that we still, you know, that we need to heal. And we're still healing. I mean, you know, it's just in the first iteration, we had no fucking clue, really. You know, and I think it's important for people to understand, like, you know, how do two relationship teachers not know how to, you know?
Oh, gosh.
That's the humbling thing is you can be really good at creating sexual polarity. You can be really good at creating magic. You can be really good at creating the, you know, the so-called sacred intimacy space. But if it's not built upon a foundation of deep healing and deep work that's much less sexy, right? It's the imago dialogues. It's the capacity to go do your own deep therapy. It's like all the stuff that we didn't do in that first iteration that we're doing now. It's like trying to build a temple on a cracking foundation. And I think that a lot of people who are in, you know, the sacred intimacy world can do the sacred intimacy part. They can get together and fuck each other to God and, you know, see, you know, but they can't actually build the space of trust and safety that supports that long term. And we got a really deep root awakening on that level.
Immediately.
Immediately.
And I think that's something that's pretty important to share, is that, like, you know, we did not glide into this, like, you know, totally etheric, easeful love story. We glid directly into our triggers. Like, even that first night, we had
forest fire.
Forest fire. And that first night when I went over, like, we had our first taste of that. And then we had another taste a couple of days later, and then another taste, you know, but there was something that was like pulling us in. But it felt like there, I mean, it was like karmic connection, of course, that's so there with you and I. But there was also, like you said, this deep sense of belonging, home, and magic. Like we could feel that there was a source of magic between us, even through all that stuff of like, this is hard, but like I want to unravel this. Like I want to lean in more to this, whatever's happening here. And it would always be so rewarding on the other side. And now we've been on this path of learning how to make those pain points more artful, like truly more artful in a way that we were not able to do before. Yeah. For me, in our first iteration, what I did, and I can see so clearly now at the time I didn't, because we didn't really talk about the power dynamics mm-hmm. back then, mm-hmm. you know. We had maybe a couple conversations about it, about like you'd ask me, like you'd let me know if you ever felt like there was a power dynamic. And I'd be like, yeah, I'll let you know. But like, I wouldn't because of that feeling inside of me. And what I really want to own around that power dynamic is that you were not asking for that. You were not using that for your conscious ability. In fact, I put you there because I still had some kind of pedestal-y mindset like residue with you. I still had pedestal residue. I like that. I still had that. And I was putting you there, like in your spot of man in power. Mm-hmm. And then I was punishing you for it. Unconsciously, kind of putting you there. And then not that, you know, you had no part in anything, but that I can really own that I put you in a place of power in my mind and my unconscious. And then I hated you for that at times. And I never could articulate that. So then it kind of left you being like, you know, what am I doing? Like, you know, you thinking, what am I doing? My belief system was so strong that, you know, there wasn't room for grace in that specific thing. And I would hold on to like every little thing you did ever that hurt me. I create a little list so that I had my story, so that my story could be proven.
Yeah.
My list was so long. Here's my list. Of
She's
all
not
things.
Kidding. She had long fucking lists.
Long list. Yes. Long list of resentments. Yeah.
Some of them months old.
Some it was like the way you looked at me that first night. And what also made it even more challenging is that I didn't really love clearing conversations. Yeah. I don't, but I'm really working on getting into a place of love in it. So I have my resentment list and then I wouldn't really want to thoroughly clear them. So you couldn't win. Now that's really
that's
my
how
biggest
it felt.
Piece.
That's how it felt. Yeah. And
that's how we.
But I think the thing, looking back now that I see, is that I was a mirror for you, kind of relentless about looking at this, like looking how you're putting me in the perpetrator role. Look at how you're like making me the villain. Look how you're like, you know, and luckily I'm relentless in being that mirror. And so are you, right? You're relentless with me about, you know, showing me like, okay, where are you, you know, trying to be controlling? Where are you, you know, being too much of an eight? Where are you, you know, not sensitive to what I can and cannot, what my nervous system can and cannot metabolize? And, mm-hmm. and I think one of the things that we've really learned in this second iteration is that, those areas that we're pointing out to each other are the what life is asking us to change, what love is asking us to change, what karma is asking us to change. And so I said this to you this morning or yesterday, I can't remember, but I love that you are relentless in continue and brutal sometimes in showing me the things that I need to look at. Because, you know, I have blind spots like anybody, you know, I have blind spots like anybody and I need to see that. And I, you know, and that's what I want for us. I want us to be able to like be mirrors for each other in the things that, in the places that we can expand, the things that we can transmute from our childhood, from our epigenetic, from our lineage. Mm-hmm. Like this, the stuff you and I are dealing with feels like lineage stuff.
Yeah.
Doesn't just feel like this, you and me. It feels like my male lineage, your female lineage, all the, you know what I mean? It feels very deep and very ancient.
Mm-hmm. What would you say is, because it's really the same in the first and now we're still working through a lot of the same things. What would you say is the like button that I keep my finger on with you?
All of the ways that I try to control or manipulate things so that I get the love I want.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I'm still unpacking some of those ways from my childhood. You know, I came from, you know, from a number of broken families, not just one, but a few. And so, you know, those parts in me, those very deep wounded parts in me, still try to control love in some form or fashion, you know, mm-hmm. still try to manipulate love in some form or fashion. And the way that I try to do that is so triggering for you mm-hmm. that you can't help but show me. And it's incumbent upon me to listen, not necessarily to what you're saying, because what you're saying mm-hmm. is likely from a wounded place too, but deeper.
Not that you ignore me either. You don't ignore them, but you're not focusing so much on them. I can say things that are really spicy, and so you look past that.
No, I'm trying to like get to the point, and this is something I think I have learned over many years and many relationships, is like, okay, if your feminine partner's giving you feedback, I mean, I wrote about this, like, you better fucking look. You better look and look deep at what it is that she's sensing. What is causing her body to respond in a closure? Mm-hmm. What is causing her body to defend? What is causing her body to, like, you know, to deflect? And I think one of the great things that you do, you know, with your closures, you know, which I used to hate, but now I'm like, no, like that, like, she's giving me something that I need to really look at. Mm-hmm. And every time I do, you know, we kind of move through something. You know, the way I think it works with us is you give me something to look at. I, you know, normally, you know, without knowing that you're doing it, I'll be like, okay, what's going on here? I'll look at myself. I'll sort of deal with what I feel is going on myself. I'll apologize for my part, or I'll own my part. Then you'll soften and then own your part. And then we're good again. Right. You know, and that's, you know, part of, I think, you know, should be good masculine leadership to feel like what's really happening in the dynamic,
mm-hmm.
what's really happening in the dynamic, and what's my part in it, and what do I need to be a stand for?
Yeah.
You know, like, there's certain things
that I
try to be a stand for. We need to do this, or we need to do that, or I'm mm-hmm. dragging you to Minnesota this weekend for a Terry Real workshop, you know, for that, for that purpose. And, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think one of the pieces for me, so if this isn't clear, John is like a lean inner, and I can be a lean outer.
Yeah.
And so that's the dance that we do, is that he comes in, whether it's like with deep love or big love, or like, like you said, trying to control how you get love. A wave, and then I'm like, I isolate, I become kind of like an island, I close off, I leave myself. And that's a bit of the dance that we've been working with. And one of the things for me that's been a really important practice is starting to, particularly because we've had two of these iterations of a relationship, notice when, like, my closure is residue or remnants from 2 years ago, and it's not there's really no threat right now, or it's not that bad, or your voice isn't that loud, or I'm fine, like, I'm safe, I'm not being controlled. And then my body tries to, like, put, like, everything in that one little moment exists, like, all the pain of my life exists in that one tiny little moment. And then my body will, like, close off or shield because of the stories, or even not just stories, but, like, the, you know, the felt memories, just what's living in the body from my childhood. Because it's a perfect match. Like, my parents were helicopter suffocating in my face, enmeshment in every way, shape, or form, which John knows, but, like, it is to the infinity degree of enmeshment. And so even an inch leaning in can trigger all that enmeshment in my body. And then this, what I've called recently, this kind of shield will arise. And my work has been
to get out your list.
And then I get out my list.
The shield comes up, the lists come out, and then, you know,
it's so
grenades get lobbed.
Yeah, it's like I have a structure to my shield breakdown. Mm-hmm. It's like, these are the steps that we do in order to properly. This is how the army, like, you know, goes to the front line. So I've been really in this practice too of learning how to differentiate between my trauma from my lineage and John just trying to love me. Like you, like totally different things, but the body doesn't always know.
Right.
And it's just like,
I think that's crucial. The body doesn't know.
Yeah.
Right. And I think, you know, just for people listening, like I'm sure we're not the only ones who have this experience. You know, I came from a house of neglect, right? So there's a part of me still, a young one in me that's, you know, love starved and wants to make sure love is okay. Love's not leaving. Love's not angry. Love's not, you know what I mean? That's the young one in me. And the young one in you is like, you know, don't try to control me. Don't suffocate me. Don't da 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 da. And those two are perfect clashes. And, you know, after studying a little more this part of our dynamic, I realized that so many couples have that dynamic. And so many are like figuring out how to meet in the middle of you leaning in more to repair, you know, and me giving space for you to be closed and have your experience without it being my problem, really, you know, or my bad day or my bad week or whatever it is. And just maintaining love from, not a distance, but just a safe space so you can kind of work through what you need to work through. And that, you know, as simple as that sounds, that's fucking hard work.
It is.
That's hard work because the first thing you want to do when those triggers get pushed is go right into an adaptive child stance and, you know, and protect. Protect. And I think that's, you know, that's been the beautiful lessons that we've been working through the last few months.
So I think this is a good segue into our age because a lot of this too amplifies.
You look great though, baby.
Oh,
for 65.
Thank you.
You look really good. You keep it together.
Yes, I'm so happy to have a young man. Yeah, so many people have questions about our age gap or age difference.
Legit.
We'll say that it's more than 20 years.
We will.
That's all we will see. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've shared a bit. I want you to start with this because I've shared a bit about my.
Well, I think the
how
thing,
does age? Yeah, how
I
does
mean,
age?
I saw the questions that people were giving you, and so many of them are about our age gap, which, quite frankly, I think is kind of superficial. You know what I mean? Because it's just easy to look at us and go, oh, there's an age gap there. And, but actually our age gap serves us
so much.
It actually like, we actually are perfect for each other in all the ways that come with us being different ages.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I think that people don't necessarily see and wouldn't see unless they knew us, like our friends know us. Right. But you know, sexually, emotionally, lifestyle wise, like energetically, like all of the things that come from us being, you know, millennial Gen X, you know, really serve us. I guess nourish us. So I guess I would say to the people, you know, who are concerned about the age gap, it's like, you know, we because we want to have a family, you know, that's a legit issue. Like I'm going to be older than you and I'm making this decision to like have the last third of my life be a second act of fatherhood and parenthood. And I'm excited about that. And that's a legitimate age gap question, but the other stuff, the emotional stuff, the sexual stuff, the energetic stuff, like, man, we fit
so much.
We fit
so deeply.
Yeah.
Yeah. John and I were talking about this the other night when we were looking at all the questions and really unpacking like age, because for myself, and I'm sure for a lot of women who are in age gap relationships and they are the younger one, it's kind of the easiest first thing to be afraid of. Like when we are not doing so well, first thing that comes up for me is, oh my God, our age difference. It's like you said, it's kind of superficial. It's like in any relationship, oftentimes there's that one thing. There's that one thing in every couple where it's like, oh, but this thing. Oh, but he's a Democrat. Oh, but you know,
yeah, right.
You know, it's like, there's always something. Oh, but he doesn't have a good relationship with his dad, whatever. You know, it's important to look at that, at what the thing is in your relationship that you kind of cling to as a distraction. And I find that that's really the only negative thing about our age gap is that it's there in my mind whenever we fight. And that annoys me. And I'd like for it not to be a concern that comes up when we fight, but there's just like a primal thing around it. Besides that, which that is actually starting to become less and less and less, the more devoted we are, the more, the deeper that we go, the more I'm, you know, I really have this kind of Arwen, Aragorn relationship to us, is that I would rather have this lifetime with you and go as deep as fucking possible than have, you know, the rest of my life be half-assed with guys and like
full, you know, conscious men, children.
Yeah. And I know that there's, you know, I don't live in a world of scarcity. I know there's tons of great people out there, but it's like, this is the man that I love with all my heart, all my body, all my soul. I would rather like milk everything we've got than let it go out of this like number, out of a number. Like, it just doesn't hold any weight compared to love. And it takes time to get there. You know, when you're in a beginning relationship that there's an age gap, just for anyone that is, it's really palpable at the beginning. You're really conscious of it. Or you're really not because you're in the honeymoon. But at some point, there's going to be a time where it becomes like thick and palpable and it's like a thing. But then it goes away, I find. It goes away, at least that's what
I mean, I only think about it when people ask.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
Yeah, but you're also the older one.
Yeah.
So it's a little different because, you know, I'm the one that's really having to sit with facing life without you, you know, assuming that you do go first, which you might not. You never know.
I plan to live a long time.
So that's another thing. Like, John is very active and young. I'm very old and grandma-y. So we really merge in that way around our lifestyles. Like, there's not as one of my teachers asked me, like, how are you going to feel like being in your 30s? And like, do you want to like really be in your 30s? And I'm like, I am really in my 30s with John. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm living my 30s exactly the way I would want to. Mm-hmm. And sex is better than I've, you know, ever experienced, deeper than anything else. Also, our kinks match up really well.
Our kinks match up perfectly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's totally separate from age gap. You know what I mean? I think in counseling people on how to approach this, and you could really make it how to approach any sort of differences, right? They're not necessarily your physical type,
mm-hmm.
or totally. or you know what I mean? Or they're a Democrat and you're a Republican, you know, or, you know, they're like, to really look at the ways that you do fit, that matter, right? And age is, it's not unimportant, but it's pretty far down the list.
Yeah.
You know, and for me, the thing that matters most and the thing that I worried about because of your age is like, would you want to do the work? You know what I mean? Like, is she just going to think, you know, is she too young and naive and too da-da-da-da that she's not going to, like, want to dive in and do the deep, chewy work that I see we need to do? Yeah. And every time, you know, you assuage that fear, I just relax even more, right? And so, you know, as long as those things are getting handled, like that the sexual kinks and nourishment fits really beautifully, and we're both like kind of leaning into our individual and collective work that we need to do. And as long as, you know, what we're doing together actually serves our communities and we're bringing what we're learning to people we teach, I can just tell the haters to fuck off.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you know, luckily I'm not living my life for y'all.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. You know, I've always been very clear of the kind of archetype that is, you know, a match for me. And it's exactly the thing of like, don't control me. And also, I love when you control me. For any other man, I think it'd be very confusing, but you've really learned how to work with that. Like, you're with someone who the biggest nightmare is to feel controlled,
right,
or enmeshed. And all I want is for you to put a collar on my neck and tell me what to do. You know, you have to be very artful with like, okay, when do I hold the line and what I'm a stand for? When do I give her the space? When do I bring the, you know, it's not a dom kink. That's not really our thing as like sub dom, but it is, you know, it's very liberating to, you know, for you to be in the daddy energy. Mm-hmm. Not daddy as in father, daddy as in daddy.
Right.
Yeah, I love daddy. And then also fuck daddy. Right. It's just a lot to work with. Yeah.
Keeps me on my toes.
Yeah. And yeah. You've got, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You've got the wideness, you've got the groundedness, you've got the direction. All of these things are so nourishing for me. And I don't think I could really rest in anything other than that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and yeah, I don't know how many people probably intuit this about you, but the thing that nourishes me is it's less about the age and it's more about the energy, right? It's like how much you love clothes and you love energy and bringing different flavors and bringing different energy in the range and just like your fearlessness to go into, you know, deep, funky, chewy, dark sexual places with me. I mean, like that's has nothing to do with age.
Right.
I know plenty of women who are 10 years older than you that won't touch that. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's, I need that. Yeah. I do. It's like food for my soul. It's like what I live, what I teach. Right. I need somebody who wants to go those places with me. Mm. So I think I would say if anybody, because it was a lot of questions about it, so maybe it's something your people are really struggling with. It's like, you know, start by measuring like the things that really matter, the energetic nourishment, the sexual nourishment, the emotional nourishment, the lifestyle alignment. Like we're pretty aligned lifestyle-wise. We're pretty aligned with what we want to create. We're very aligned.
Very aligned,
yeah.
The ways that we eat these weird bowls of just like broccoli and sour cream and meat and just mash it all into like big, you know, that's just probably like not relevant to this podcast. But still, like even that, I think it's just weird that we have, you know, our eating style is very similar. The way we like to go out to eat, what we like to drink, you know, our bedtime. Kind of.
More or less. Yeah.
You're kind of, you know, you could stay up a little bit later than me.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Grandma's in bed by 9:30.
Yeah. Grandma's probably been in bed since 4 p.m. doing things in bed, but asleep by 9 p.m.
Right.
Yeah. And just about the piece with you and the clothing, I cannot like emphasize this enough for women, how even if a man is not telling you like, I want an outfit change, you know, like put on something new. Like, and when I say outfit change, I don't mean like, I don't like what you're wearing, put on something else. I mean, okay, you've been wearing that for a while. What do you want to wear next? Okay, now what? Like when John and I have a spacious evening together, he will sometimes request that mid spacious evening, there's an outfit change because he likes range and diversity. And it's such a thrilling invitation for me of like, oh, okay, what am I going to put on now?
Right.
So I have this section in my closet that's like more of the costumey things. I have big robes and fluffy hair ties and tiny tops and gowns and all the things. And you love it so much. And to feel like that part of me is desired by my man, wanted by my man, and fills my man. Like, I don't think I really knew that in our first iteration. Because I remember our first month together ever, we were talking about things that we need. And you had said to me in that first month, I need energy. Like, and I, you know, that's a pretty simple statement, but I can see now that this is one of the things you were speaking to, that you need someone who cares about bringing range.
Right. And also can drop in, and this is part of this is your acting background, part of this is, but you know, when we do have these spacious journeys together, I'll say, hey, I'll give like a texture, like, let's explore this now.
Yeah.
And you'll be like, okay. And you'll come back with sort of the perfect outfit that matches the thing I wanted to explore. And then we can go deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I think, you know, I don't know, if people can learn anything from what we thrive in, I don't, maybe it applies to them, maybe not, but what we thrive in is that exchange of, you know, the really beautiful polarized exchange of a little direction and energy. And you know what I mean? And I think it, you know, it feeds both of us in very deep ways.
Yeah. We haven't really touched on the repair process. So I want us to share that because that's actually the number one thing people are wanting to know about.
Yeah.
Ever since we announced that we were back together, people, how do you repair? How do you repair?
How the fuck did that?
If y'all can do it,
yeah.
I want to know your secrets. Right. So I don't think, I don't know. Do you want to go deep into the breakup piece? I feel like maybe we can do cliff notes, just cliff notes.
Did you bailed?
I bailed.
You bailed and then
John gave me a second chance. We got back. We broke up. I was like, "Eh, fuck you." And then we had a second chance at getting back together. And then I broke up with him like in a really awful way and really quick way. It's just part of that shield part of me. And then I punished you for it, you know. And then I went through a period of that year being both empowering as fuck of like figuring out who I am, what I want. My voice came to life in a new way, but I also was kind of processing those resentments that I was processing that list of resentments that I really didn't get to, that I really didn't allow myself to process with you. And then I kind of processed it publicly in a way. I think kind of artfully. We will always maybe disagree on that one. But regardless, it was public and it was really awful for you. It was really awful for you. It was not fair for you. And I was also going through my own kind of crazy making, because when your body naturally orients to a person that you're no longer with and that you have unprocessed things with and that you wanted things from that you didn't get, or you still feel like there's more things you want to share, and you can't really trust people around you, especially because I just kind of felt like everyone secretly loved you. And I was just like, are you going to date John? Like, you can't. I had all these rules, like all these things combined of like feeling like I can't trust my friends and can't really reach you because obviously you were taking healthy space, and also having little people in my ear around like, here's how you can bounce back from this breakup and blah, 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 milk it. It made me crazy. It made me, like, I called myself a little gargoyle, where I felt like I was alive, a live gargoyle, stuck in a cement gargoyle, like on the top of the ugliest building, and I couldn't get out. So I went crazy.
Screaming, John's an asshole. Screaming, from the top.
Fuck you, John. I love you, John. Why don't you love me, John? Fuck you. Yeah, just like, exactly. Exactly. It was nutty. It was nutty. It was a nutty time. So that, is there anything you want to share about that time before we go into repair?
Well, I think a lot of men have this experience of trying to give, like my experience of that was I really wanted to, you know, the first time we broke up, we were trying to buy a house in Sedona together. Yeah. You know what I mean? And the second time we broke up, I was like planning to move to Austin, come to Austin to help you move into your
you
new
were
place.
Coming to help me move.
And so it was this really sort of heartbreaking sense of like trying to give the woman I love, like my love and support and, you know, commitment and all the things. And then having it rejected, and then having this narrative come up that felt unfair and like stuff I had, you know what I mean? Like my confusion was like, we had processing conversations about the same resentments multiple times, and yet those were still the things that you were upset about. And so I was just like, what else can I do? Like, I've apologized for these things multiple times. Like I felt crazy. Mm-hmm. I can't, you know. And then when I was like, all right, I mean, obviously we're not meant to be together, and then to let go, and then to start feeling, you know, punished, you know, via social media, it was some of the hardest 2-3 months of my life. Really, you know, I mean, other than obviously Claire dying takes the cake, but it was right up there in the top three. You know, which is why I think the repair piece was so, I mean, crucial. We couldn't have come back together if it wasn't for that.
So how we got back together was, after all this gnarly breaking down separately was happening, you actually moved. I moved to Austin. You moved to Austin. You were already going to move to Austin, which is kind of silly that I was like, I'm going to move to Austin, the place where my ex now is moving to too. And then I was mad at you for living in the same place I lived in, even though you were going to live there before me. In retrospect, you can see your own crazy a little better. So there were, you know, there were many emails exchanged. There were text exchanged. There was just like frustration and anger, us like fighting. But then once we got to this point where there was nothing left to say, particularly for me, I'll speak for myself, there was nothing left to say. I was like, I was all, you know, I wore myself out, which I have a lot of energy.
It took you months to do that, baby. You have a lot of stamina to get it all out.
I mean, and finally, I remember in the Christmas time, it was like on the floor level of adrenal fatigue, nervous system exhaustion. I just can't. There's nothing left for me to say. I'm tired of myself. And then you ended up entering a relationship for a period of time, and it took that for me to learn probably the most important thing for myself that led to us now working. And that was, before, I could not fathom loving you if you were not mine. I had possessiveness with you. We're not talking about jealousy. We're talking about like, these are the things you do for me. These are the things I do for you. This is who you are. And I think that led to all the resentment, is that anytime you stepped outside of this contract I had in my mind with you, I withheld, because I'm thinking like, you're not abiding by the contract in my mind of who you're supposed to be. And I withdrew love for real, for real. Even now, I think there's a thread of love that's there, but I think I withdrew all of it, even in those scared moments. So it took you entering a different relationship for me to be like, oh, the truth is, like, he's now done the deepest level of being not mine. Now he's really not mine. Now he's really my ex. He's with somebody else. And I love him. And I just let myself kind of be in that place of like, oh, wow, we've broken through that. Like, he's done all the things that make him not mine. And I still have, my heart still loves him. So I sent you this very respectful message of just like, I want you to know that I set you free. I just want to love you, and I wish you the best in your relationship. And I actually felt that. I actually felt like, oh, I want him to be happy. And you received it so respectfully and sweetly. You're just like, thank you for this. And wasn't until after y'all's, your relationship with her came to a close that you were like, hey, what's up, girl?
Well, it wasn't quite like that. It wasn't quite like that. There was, I knew I had been pushing since we broke up the first time for us to have this reconciliation where we kind of respectfully, you know, dissect our relationship and own our parts and apologize for things that we need and hear each other out. And I kept calling for that, and you were, right. You would be no.
Yeah, yeah. You were setting the stage for that, and I absolutely did not want to give that to you.
Yeah.
Because you weren't mine.
Yeah, yeah. So fuck me. Yeah. So, yeah. So
trying to be all conscious.
I was trying to do some kind of conscious uncoupling, and I got rejected. And so, you know, and then when you contacted me the first time, I was with somebody else, and it didn't feel appropriate to push for that again. So when we broke up, I was like, this is still unfinished, this reconciliation. I had no idea that we would end up getting back together. I just knew that there was unfinished business for us in terms of just healing each other through that year of a breakup. And so when I reached back out in May, it was with that in mind of like, look, now maybe is the time, you seem like you're ready, you know, now maybe is the time for us to have that reconciliation conversation.
Yeah, you were so clean with it. You were very clean with it. I'll also say is that, like, I've, you know, from the beginning of us being together, I've felt a very psychic chord with you. I've never felt that with anybody but you. maybe a little with my mom, but you know, didn't make sense. But with you, like I felt the day, there was a moment when I felt our cord get connected before we even got together. And then it's another reason why I was crazy during our breakup is because I felt you. I felt you the week you moved to Austin. I felt you enter the city. I felt you the probably the day that you entered a new relationship. And I also felt you when you exited it. I was hit particularly hard that week of like, what's happening? Like, I'm off my center. I was really starting to feel like spring, like, okay, I'm really feeling like myself after a really hard winter. And then all of a sudden I felt really off. I was like, whoa, John, like what is John doing? I could feel something. And I had a conversation with my friend and she was like, oh, just so you know, John and who he was seeing, they've split. And so you were kind of circulating in my orbit of just spaciousness. It wasn't like possibility. I wasn't like, what's happening now? It was like there was a kind of a fruitfulness I was feeling, just breath. It felt kind of like a good crazy in that moment, just like off my center. It wasn't even crazy. It was just a good off my center. But I always felt you. I always felt when you were off, you know, doing things or moving around, like I could just feel it, which is also something hard in a breakup when you have that really. And I had multiple people say, I've got a great guy who can cord cut for you. And I booked maybe 3 sessions with this one particular cord cutter and I canceled the night before each time. And my friend was like, well, the when you're really ready to let go, you will cut that cord. And I was like, okay, I'll keep that in my back pocket. And I just never did. Didn't want to, which is kind of interesting. Like, and I think it's why I also pushed away the conscious uncoupling, is because there was a part of me that wanted to go deeper than all my bullshit. Like there was a part of me that just wanted to reach in to source in a place that was a little deeper than my own bullshit. And I just didn't have the tools. So you were very respectful and you reached out and said like, hey, let's have this conversation. I remember your name popping up on my phone with the Marco Polo app. John Wineland sent you a Marco Polo. And I was like, what? Yeah. So then we entered the repair conversation, which was for about.
It was first because I was gone. It was over Marco Polo.
Yes, which is a video messaging app, which a lot of people don't know about.
Yeah.
Kind of blows my mind.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know.
It's great for that. And it was a month of just like repair and apologies and acknowledgements and lessons. And we did this like month long, very respectful, long distance kind of repair. And in that process, I think things sparked for both of us. And we were like, well, we're both in Austin, you know, we're both available. Mm-hmm. What would it be like to see each other again?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and then here we are.
Yeah.
But the repair process took, you know, because there was such, you know, damage from our breakup and our first iteration for both of us. And it took 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And multiple conversations and multiple like owning of our own stuff. And, you know, like you're talking about today and me like owning all the ways, all the places you were right, you know, all the things I didn't see, all the ways I didn't, you know, I didn't realize I was hurting you. You know what I mean? Like a lot, most of it was just unconscious. Like I unconsciously didn't know that my natural 8 Enneagram way of being was hard on your nervous system in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And so I needed to, not so much apologize, but acknowledge for you, you mm-hmm. know, what I did that was hurtful for you and you did the same. And it was very deep. And I think, you know, for those people who are, you know, who are trying to reconcile with an ex, that piece is what I think saved us.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact that we really took the time to self-reflect and then to try to make right the wrongs between us, it was a very deep process. It wasn't just a one apology conversation. It was multiple conversations. It was multiple layers. It was, you know, late evenings, you know, going deep into the pain of stuff. Like there was, it was the deepest repair process I've ever done.
Yeah.
you know, for nice. Sure.
Yeah. And there were definitely things that I brought to you during that time. And my perspective is that it was a little more of me having to repair, because I'm the one that had these actions during our breakup that were really painful to you. And that is one of the incredible lineage-changing gifts that our relationship has brought me and my line. Because even this whole podcast, I'm like, oh yeah, I was crazy here and I was in psychosis here and I did this to you and I would not have been able to so freely own all this. Yeah. Like, you know, I'm I have no charge. I can admit all these places where I was a bitch and I was crazy and I don't feel anything about it. Like it feels freeing to admit it, but that is not something I saw my mother do.
No.
Bless her. She didn't have the tools.
No.
So my father, he just never experienced ownership from the feminine. Mm. And so there's so much charge in my family. And I never got apologies from my mother.
Yeah.
So I didn't really learn how to just acknowledge without being wrong, without being like, you know, Christian, like you're punished, you did this bad thing.
Without there being shame or, you know.
Shame. Yeah. And so... Yeah, it's interesting. We're talking last night about shame. I don't really feel like I have that much shame. It's more so that I have this wall, this energetic shield that just makes it, that's not there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not there. I didn't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a narcissist and I'm the one that's not taking reflection.
Yeah.
You know, this is what is so beautiful about you demanding leaning in and wanting reflection because it was so above where I was able to go before. But now, particularly because of our breakup, like really the most shape-shifting damage and beauty that needed to occur was in that breakup period, because that's where all the loss happened. That's where all the gumption and the will to move through all this came from.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think, I mean, and this is one of the things I admire and love about you so much is that you, and this is the thing I hope people listening can get. If your relationship is to succeed and thrive, you are going to have to do the things that your parents could not do for you.
Yeah.
You're going to have to find, like my, you know, nobody in my family stayed when shit got tough.
Mm.
Nobody like leaned in and stayed when, you know, the plates were flying, right? It was, you know, I'm out. And so me being able to self-reflect and stay is me doing the things that my parents could not do. Me leaning into love through razor blades, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Are the things that my parents could not do. Mm-hmm. You being able to own so fully and beautifully like you are today, like all these areas of your own crazy and, you know, and wound and heartbreak and all that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that changes the karma of our lineages. That's the thing that goes, I believe, seven generations back, seven generations forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we have, you know, a child, God is willing, then, you know, that child won't have to carry that because you did that work, because you did that. You were able to be so humble and sincere and beautiful in your own reflection.
Mm.
And me too, you know, me too, you know, I'll give myself credit for that.
You're great at that. You're great at that.
Thank you.
You know, you really know how to take
a lot of men's group training.
So, yeah.
Men's group training, yeah.
Yeah.
And just, you know, just for the, I imagine most of your listeners are women, but for the women out there, like, do not underestimate how nourishing it is for your masculine partner for you to take responsibility for your part in the dynamic. There's something in the masculine soul that relaxes.
Mm-hmm.
It relaxes my nervous system to hear you go, oh, I was fucking crazy, or I was walled up and lobbing grenades, or here I was, you know, it's not like I get that I feel right.
Yeah.
It's that my nervous system relaxes because I can feel your self-awareness. I can feel the part of you. I can feel your healthy masculine. I can feel your sacred masculine. And so for those watching this, like really your healthy and sacred masculine is the part of you that reflects on your, you know, that is emotionally aware, that is relationally aware. And that's actually a gift for your masculine partner. Mm. I mean, all the energy and the wildness and all the great stuff that the feminine brings is also a gift. Mm-hmm. But for me, and I know this is true for other men, like that piece, what you did in the last, you know, 6 months and even in the last couple of weeks, it makes me feel safe.
Mm.
It makes me feel safe to make mistakes,
mm-hmm.
you know, or know that you're going to tell me when something I'm doing isn't working for you and it's not going to, you know, and it's going to be, I'm not going to be punished for it. You know, my wound is withdrawal and punishment. Withdrawal, punishment, removal of love, right? So you're perfect.
So you're perfect. Yeah, match made in heaven.
You're perfect. Yeah. And the beauty is that I get now to heal that wound regardless of what you do on any given day.
Mm.
I mean, hopefully we'll continue to grow together and I'm sure we will. And, you know, and we do the fucking work.
Yes.
We do the work. Like,
we do.
We do. I mean, I love people to get that. Like, you know, we do repair conversations. We do dialogues. We do praise practices. We, you know, we do like little morning check-ins we started doing on things with desires. And I mean, we stoke the fire with practice.
But it's not like we don't actually do let's do a polarity practice.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't do a polarity practice.
We rarely it just happens naturally,
yeah.
But the practices are more, you know, more
yeah.
emotional and more in the, you know, trust foundation building.
Yes. Yeah. Which, yeah. And, you know, it's been being able to put myself in your shoes and imagine what it would be like to be with a partner who just denies their part all the time. Just like, I don't see that. I didn't do that. You know, it really makes me empathize with you in that experience of not being able to trust my level of consciousness. And so it's given me more of a desire to really lean into that, into all the ways that I make you feel unsafe, or you feel unsafe and I'm there, you know, or whatever it may be. So yeah, I think all of the ways that we're doing the more stage two dialogue, and also you're helping me by doing it in more bite-sized chunks, which I really need because I want to clear things. I have things to clear, resentments. Resentments come up often. And I think that's something that should be normalized, that,
yeah.
you know, you've taken a stand for us having some time once a week where we just can sit and we can talk about like things that are beautiful, things we're grateful for, and then also clear things that are,
yeah.
that have accumulated over the week.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to learn more and more how valuable that is to have time and place for those things, because then our natural attraction, polarity, and the comfort and the rain.
All of it comes from safety. I mean, and that's the thing. I maybe people who see us and or who are in the space like just don't see. It's like the duck paddling furiously or the swan paddling furiously under the water. You just don't see it. You know what I mean? And that's the really hard work. You know, that's the really hard work. Like I said, we're going to a Terry Real, whose book I love. It's called The Fierce Intimacy, for those of you who want to read it. It's really beautiful. We're going to a workshop to do this kind of classic therapeutic conference room in Minnesota, right? To learn tools on how to create safety for each other,
mm-hmm.
right? And how to stay current, how to communicate. And what I see in couples, that's the area that's weakest. People, you know, crawl over each other to get into a sexual polarity workshop and do that kind of stuff because it's such a peak experience
mm-hmm.
to have that, right? And it's great. I love it. But it's the harder work that people just kind of ignore or dismiss. And yet that's what creates the safety, which allows sacred union to really flourish.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And we're learning that, you know, firsthand.
Yeah. I mean, we're very blessed that like we know the magic is there. We have so much magic in our connection. We have so much emotional range. We have very big emotions. We're both very fiery people. We love to drop the veil and connect with spirit. We have spiritual practices. We just have so many places where like the magic, the esoteric, the like higher realms are like, oof, they're so there. It is the root that like we're really working on creating so that we can have a family.
Yeah.
So we can like, we already have a family. We have our family and it's deepening and it's growing and it's creating those roots. But there are particular roots that you feel very passionate about to grow so that our child doesn't have to grow up witnessing X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. And then I have particular roots that I want to grow. And it's always connected to our lineage. It's like where we come from and not wanting to pass that on.
Yeah.
So it's work.
Yeah.
It's work.
Yeah.
I mean, we fight.
Yeah.
We fight and our fights are a part of our healing.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important perspective for those relationships that have very two fiery people is that you're going to fight and it's normal and it's okay. And it's actually a perfect gateway to deeper connection if you have the tools to move through it without disconnecting from love.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good luck, y'all.
Yeah. Good luck. Bye. Okay, baby. So we're closing our podcast here. I have a quick fire round that I'm just going to like whip out.
Okay.
And I want to, before I do that, any final note on our relationship in particular that you want to end with?
Yeah. You know, the thing you encouraged me to do last night, I thought was so great. I think it's just a good window into, you know, our life. So I came home last night and I was really crunchy. I came home from working out and I was just like, and I was still really crunchy from stuff in my day. And I was just, rah, 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 you know, like feeling, rah. And I come home and you've like made rose tea. And you're sitting by the fireplace with a bunch of tarot cards out and you're in a really beautiful nightgown and you're on the sheepskin. And I'm looking at you and I'm like, oh, rah, 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 rah. Like, I can't even appreciate that, you know, like that's how bad my mood was. And I sat down and I said, can I just vent? And you listened to me vent about what was pissing me off for a couple minutes. Right. Mm-hmm. So for the nerds out there, I asked her if I could vent. She said, yeah, I didn't just come in and vent. It's very important. Men, ask your feminine partner if you can vent. I asked her if I could vent. She said, yes, I vented. After about 3 or 4 minutes of me venting, you were like, I think you should like get this out. Mm. Like you should scream and get this out. And I was like, no, you were like, yeah, but you know, and I knew you were right immediately. And so I got on my knees. I pounded on my chest. I did some very deep primal screaming. Mm-hmm. I got what I needed to get out. You held the dog's ears. And that's what I needed, you know, which is a third stage, as David would call it, or a sacred thing. So we initiated this sort of really nice sort of second stage. Let me just clear what's on my part. You held space for me. You were like, no, you need to go deeper. Mm. I was like, fuck you, but you're right. So then I did. And then we ended up having this really beautiful night by the fire.
Mm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, those are, if I was going to like let, I don't want to let people into our personal life too much, but if I was going to, you know, if I was going to let people see something, you know, that's a scene or an evening that I would like people to see.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And the beautiful night by the fire would not have happened had she not both held space for what was frustrating for me, but had also really encouraged me to like get it out of my body.
Mm-hmm.
And so like the sacred intimacy, the juicy sexual stuff does not happen without the other stuff.
Yes.
First.
Yeah. Yeah. And I find so much pleasure in watching you and just watching you like pound your chest and scream and let it out. Mm. Like that's like, I don't know if nourishing is the right word, but it's like, it's activating. Mm. It's activating for me to witness you and your expression. And it's kind of like a treat because you are so, you know, meticulous and holding time and space. So like being able to offer both a nourishing like tea night with tarot cards where we ask the cards a question and also like witnessing you in that place. And then, you know, afterwards you kind of flipped it around and then, you took control of me, and it was beautiful. And it was then, like, I always know there's going to be that dance. We have the dance. You hold beautiful space for me and my many daily, you know, emotions, and will invite me into expressions, and or invite me into, like, go be a bed girl, mm-hmm. go lay in bed and, like, nourish yourself in that way. And then moving it the other way. So I think that's really important too, just like allowing your connection to have intentional shape-shifting moments where one is being able to be in that role and the other one just without using it against them is in that role. And then, because you will switch, you will move through it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a beautiful one.
Fluidity and agility are super important.
Yeah. I love that you brought that up. Okay, quick fire round. Okay. I'm just gonna kind of make these up as I go. If love was a meal or a drink, what would it be? Anything you could choose.
If love was a drink, it would be a spicy Cadillac margarita.
Oh. Why?
Because it's enlivening. You know, the agave cactus just wakes up the heart. It's enlivening. It's spicy. Mm. It's sweet. Mm. Right? It's soul nourishing.
Mm. This question comes from the audience. Mm-hmm. How regularly do we fuck?
Ooh. Well, I said this last night when I heard this question. Like, we go in clusters. Mm. Yeah, like we'll go 3 or 4 nights in a row and just have, you know, super deep, and then we'll go, you know, 5-6 days without. And I think, you know, I think it's a very healthy rhythm. Mm. Like I think we have a very healthy rhythm where we'll cluster, and right when you're ovulating, that, you know, oftentimes that cluster will be, you know, amplified. So yeah, I don't think it's times per week. I think it's more like, I don't know, probably 10, 12 times per month, probably. Something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe a little more, depending on, because I travel a lot, you know, you travel some, you know what I mean? So that also impacts it.
What artist do you look up to the most? What artist?
Talking about musical artists?
Any artist. Not like a teacher in the personal development field.
Oh, this is, I mean, you know, I am a old school fan of Bruce Springsteen, right? And partly because his art is just kept changing, right? He just kept growing and new doing new things. Partly because he's been with the same group of artists for, like, he has all these great artists behind him for 50 years. And he also is so deeply passionate about whatever he's singing about, whether it's people out of work or political or, you know, or racial injustice shootings or, you know what I mean? Or a heartbreak. So I like artists that, like, go deep into the human experience. And same with writers. Mm. And yeah.
If you had any other life, like you were a spy in Italy, or you were making shoes in Germany, what would you do? Mm. Any other life? You could be a woman, could be a man, could be an alien.
I would be a baseball player.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah. I would be a baseball player.
I love that. Mm-hmm. That's very fitting for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love baseball, for those of you who don't know. Yeah, yeah.
What's the first word you think of when I say luteal phase?
It's so great that I've learned to go from that place, because you were the first one I really like the luteal phase was really in my face.
You know, like, luteal phase.
things are different that week, right? And
they are.
Things are different that week, and so it's been really beautiful for me to kind of, like, learn with that and work with that, and also understand if shit goes awry, you know what I mean? It's likely not about me totally, you know, it might be some about me, but you know what I mean? Like, and so it's just been good. And it's also just nice. Like, thing I love about your cycle is that it really is like the seasons.
Mm, yeah.
Like, you really do, you know, you really do, like, have distinct seasons. And so it's just great for me to be tuned into that and feel that. And I track your cycle
I love it.
Ride along with you. Yep. Ride along with you. Yep. And I make myself a small target.
Very smart. Last two questions. How many kids do you think we'll have?
I think one. But I would go for, I'd go for two, but that's the, but one is what came through.
Okay.
The little blue light.
Little blue light. Mm. If your heart was a crystal would it be?
And why? The purple amethyst.
Mm. Yeah. And why?
Just cause it's, you know, it's weighty and deep.
Mm. Just like you. Mm. I love you so much.
I love you too,
baby. Thank you so much for coming onto the show. That's so sweet to have. I'm going to link our first episode in the show notes for this if anyone wants to go back all the way. Who knows what's in that
one,
but
yeah.
It may be kind of fun for people to listen to.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
And you have a podcast coming out.
Yeah.
Which is so exciting.
Yeah. No, I'm following in your footsteps. I've been shooting podcast episodes for the last few weeks, and I'm going to launch next month, and it's going to be called The Embodied Relationship Experience. And I'm launching it because I want to give people access to deeper conversations about, you know, all of these topics, and, you know, doing it in a 90-second reel on TikTok or Instagram TikTok. is not my way. Yeah. So, you know, those of you who want, you know, 45 minutes or an hour conversation about some of the things that we're talking about, I'll be launching next month.
And then you also have a fucking incredible online library that people can enter and then partake in practices with their partner or by themselves. And you're always adding stuff to it. And you have like community calls in it. It's a bounty and abundance of things.
Thank you. Yeah, that's also called the Embodied Relationship Experience. And that is, we've been gathering 8 years of workshop footage and taking, you know, workshop practices. So we've got hundreds of hours of couples practices, men's practices, you know, just
so
push
much.
And play. And what I'm loving is that people are coming to me and going like, yeah, we do this at home.
Yeah.
You know, people, you know, are doing this on dates. You know what I mean? Like they're, you know, push and play. I'm not sure I recommend that, but it's just a super deep, reservoir of information and practices, and people who just don't know how to get into the work, that's a great place to do that.
Yeah, you're so devoted to that particular platform, and it's incredible.
Yeah, and it's cheap. You know, my work is expensive, but that is cheap.
Yeah, so people are so lucky to be able to. Yeah. So I'll have a link to that as well. And then I have something that I am working on as well that I want to share, and that's because it feels very relevant. I am creating a program called Manifest Your King. Manifest Your King, because I feel
where
like
you go.
A king is so different from anything else. Like if someone wants a king, it comes with holding so much beauty, bountiful, like nature of love and depth and devotion, and also everything we've been talking about. So it's not a feminine masculine type program, but it's about actually going out into the world and like dating and meeting people, and like how do you manifest out of that whole ocean of people a king? What do you look for? What are the green flags, red flags, all of that? So that's not ready yet, but I'm going to include a link to be on the wait list for it.
Go.
I'm in the creation of it. I'm so excited because everybody should have a king. It's like the best thing ever to have a king. I love my king so much. Thank you, baby, for coming on the show.
Yeah,
I love you so much. Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for joining. If you want to give us some 5 stars, we would love that on Spotify and iTunes. And we will see you next month for another episode.
Hey, scientists. How critical is pure water to you? In this new podcast, Lab Water Stories Unfiltered, we at Millipore Sigma look closer at this often overlooked lab essential. Tune in as experts drop tips and insights not found in textbooks, taken from their work with MilliQ Lab Water Solutions. Lab Water Stories Unfiltered. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Millipore Sigma is the U.S. and Canada life science business of Merck KGaA, Darmstadt, Germany.
I want human connection when it comes to my health. I also want consistent care. That's why I trust that you'll be in good hands at Peoples, Austin's wellness headquarters. They've got 4 locations in town, and they have a variety of high-quality natural wellness products. And if you've got questions, you can go in and talk to someone that specializes in health and wellness. In-person wellness solutions, in my opinion, that's the best way for you to take care of yourself, your kids, your family. For an Austin original local health spot that will take care of you, go to Peoples. You can learn more at peoplesrx.com.